I heard Doc pull a breath in through his teeth like a backward whistle. "Well," he said. They both stared at me for a long moment. I was so tired and sore I barely cared what they were thinking. "Doc!" Jared started to say something in an urgent tone, but a clamor from the tunnel interrupted him. 5 men struggled through the opening. Jeb in front had Kyle's left leg in his arms. Wes had the right leg, and behind them, Andy and Aaron worked to support his torso. Kyle's head lolled back over Andy's shoulder.
"Stars, but he's heavy," Jeb grunted.
Jared and Doc sprang forward to help. After a few minutes of cursing and groaning, Kyle was lying on a cot a few feet away from mine.
"How long has he been out, Wanda?" Doc asked me.
He pulled Kyle's eyelids back, letting the sunlight shine into his pupils. I thought quickly. "As long as I've been here, the 10 minutes or so it took Ian to carry me here, and then maybe 5 more minutes before that?"
"At least 20 minutes, would you say?"
"Yes, close to that."
While we were consulting, Jeb had made his own diagnosis. No one paid any attention as he came to stand at the head of Kyle's cot. No one paid any attention until he turned an open bottle of water over Kyle's face.
"Jeb,"
Doc complained, knocking his hand away. But Kyle sputtered and blinked, and then moaned.
"What happened? Where did it go?"
He started to shift his weight, trying to look around.
"The floor is moving."
Kyle's voice had my fingers clenching the sides of my cot and panic washing through me. My leg ached. Could I limp away, slowly, perhaps?
"It's okay,"
someone murmured. Not someone. I would always know that voice. Jared moved to stand between my cot and Kyle's, his back to me, his eyes on the big man. Kyle rolled his head back and forth, groaning.
"You're safe,"
Jared said in a low voice. He didn't look at me.
"Don't be afraid."
I took a deep breath. Melanie wanted to touch him. His hand was close to mine, resting on the edge of my cot.
"Please, no," I told her. "My face hurts quite enough as it is." "He won't hit you." "You think?" "I'm not willing to risk it."
Melanie sighed. She yearned to move toward him. It wouldn't have been so hard to bear if I wasn't yearning also.
"Give him time," I pleaded. "Let him get used to us. Wait till he really believes."
She sighed again.
"Aw, hell," Kyle grumbled.
My gaze flickered toward him at the sound of his voice. I could see just his bright eyes around Jared's elbow, focused on me.
"It didn't fall," he complained.
Chapter 34. Buried.
Jared lunged forward, away from me. With a loud smacking sound, his fist hit Kyle's face. Kyle's eyes rolled back in his head and his mouth fell slack. The room was very quiet for a few seconds.
Doc said in a mild voice. "Medically speaking, I'm not sure that was the most helpful thing for his condition."
"But I feel better," Jared answered, sullen.
Doc smiled the tiniest smile.
"Well, maybe a few more minutes of unconsciousness won't kill him."
Doc began looking under Kyle's lids again, taking his pulse.
"What happened?"
Wes was by my head, speaking in a murmur.
"Kyle tried to kill it,"
Jared answered before I could.
"Are we really surprised?"
"Did not," I muttered.
Wes looked at Jared.
"Altruism seems to come more naturally to it than lies," Jared noted.
"Are you trying to be annoying?" I demanded.
My patience was not waning, but entirely gone.
How long had it been since I'd slept? The only thing that ached worse than my leg was my head. Every breath hurt my side.
I realized with some surprise that I was in a truly bad mood.
"Because if you are, then be assured you have succeeded."
Jared and Wes looked at me with shocked eyes. I was sure that if I could see the others, their expressions would match. Maybe not Jeb's. He was the master of the poker face.
"I am female," I complained. "That it business is really getting on my nerves."
Jared blinked in surprise. Then his face settled back into harder lines.
"Because of the body you wear?"
Wes glared at him.
"Because of me," I hissed.
"By whose definition?"
"How about by yours? In my species, I am the one that bears young. Is that not female enough for you?"
That stopped him short. I felt almost smug.
"As you should," Melanie approved. "He's wrong, and he's being a pig about it."
"Thank you.
We girls have to stick together."
"That's a story you've never told us," Wes murmured, while Jared struggled for a rebuttal. "How does that work?"
Wes's olive-toned face darkened, as if he'd just realized he had spoken the words out loud.
"I mean, I guess you don't have to answer that, if I'm being rude."
I laughed. My mood was swinging around wildly, out of control, slap-happy, like Mel had said.
"No, you're not asking anything inappropriate. We don't have such a complicated, elaborate setup as your species."
I laughed again, and then felt warmth in my face. I remembered only too clearly how elaborate it could be.
"Get your mind out of the gutter."
"It's your mind," I reminded her.
"Then," Wes asked.
I sighed. "There are only a few of us who are mothers. Not mothers. That's what they call us, but it's just the potential to be one."
I was sober again, thinking of it. There were no mothers, no surviving mothers, only the memories of them. "You have that potential?" Jared asked stiffly.
I knew the others were listening. Even Doc had paused in the act of putting his ear to Kyle's chest. I didn't answer his question.
"We're a little like your hives of bees or your ants. Many, many sexless members of the family, and then the queen."
"Queen?"
Wes repeated, looking at me with a strange expression.
"Not like that. But there is only one mother for every 5, 10,000 of my kind. Sometimes less. There's no hard and fast rule."
"How many drones?" Wes wondered.
"Oh, no, there aren't drones. No, I told you, it's simpler than that."
They waited for me to explain. I swallowed. I shouldn't have brought this up. I didn't want to talk about it anymore.
Was it really such a big thing to have Jared call me it?
They still waited. I frowned, but then I spoke.
"I'd started this. The mothers divide. Every cell, I guess you could call it, though our structure isn't the same as yours, becomes a new soul. Each new soul has a little of the mother's memory, a piece of her that remains."
"How many cells?" Doc asked, curious. "How many young?"
I shrugged. "A million or so." The eyes that I could see widened, looked a little wilder. I tried not to feel hurt when Wes cringed away from me. Doc whistled under his breath. He was the only one who was still interested in continuing. Aaron and Andy had wary, disturbed expressions on their faces. They'd never heard me teach before, never heard me speak so much.
"When does that happen? Is there a catalyst?" Doc asked.
"It's a choice, a voluntary choice," I told him. "It's the only way we ever willingly choose to die. A trade for a new generation."
"You could choose now to divide all your cells just like that?"
"Not quite just like that, but yes."
"Is it complicated?"
"The decision is. The process is painful."
"Painful?"
Why should that have surprised him so? Wasn't it the same for his kind?
"Men," Mel snorted.
"Excruciating," I told him. "We all remember how it was for our mothers."
Doc was stroking his chin, entranced.
I wonder what the evolutionary track would be, to produce a hive society with suiciding queens.
He was lost on another plane of thought.
Altruism, Wes murmured.
Doc said.
Yes, that.
I closed my eyes, wishing my mouth had stayed closed. I felt dizzy. Was I just tired, or was it my head wound?
Oh, Doc muttered. You've slept even less than I, haven't you, Wanda? We should let you get some rest.
Fine, I mumbled, but I didn't open my eyes.
That's just great, someone said under his breath. We've got a bloody queen mother alien living with us. She could blow into a million new buggers at any moment.
Shh. They couldn't hurt you, I told whoever it was, not opening my eyes. Without host bodies, they would die quickly. I winced, imagining the unimaginable grief. A million tiny helpless souls, tiny silver babies withering. No one answered me, but I could feel their relief in the air. I was so tired. I didn't care that Kyle was 3 feet from me. I didn't care that two of the men in the room would side with Kyle if he came around. I didn't care about anything but sleep. Of course, that was when Walter woke up.
Ugh, he groaned, just a whisper. Gladdy.
With a groan of my own, I rolled toward him. The pain in my leg made me wince, but I couldn't twist my torso. I reached out to him, found his hand. Here, I whispered.
Ah,
Walter sighed in relief. Doc hushed the men who began to protest.
Wanda's given up sleep and peace to help him through the pain. Her hands are bruised from holding his. What have you done for him?
Walter groaned again. The sound began low and guttural, but turned quickly to a high-pitched whimper. Doc winced.
Aaron, Andy, Wes, would you, go get Sharon for me, please? All of us? Get out, Jeb translated.
The only answer was a shuffling of feet as they left.
Wanda, Doc whispered, close beside my ear. He's in pain. I can't let him come all the way around.
I tried to breathe evenly. It's better if he doesn't know me. It's better if he thinks glad he is here. I pulled my eyes open. Jeb was beside Walter, whose face still looked as if he slept.
Bye, Walt, Jeb said. See you on the other side.
He stepped back.
You're a good man. You'll be missed, Jared murmured.
Doc was fumbling in the package of morphine again. The paper crackled.
Gladdy! Walt sobbed. It hurts!
Shh. It won't hurt much longer. Doc will make it stop.
Gladdy?
Yes.
I love you, Gladdy. I've loved you my whole life long.
I know, Walter. I love you too. You know how I love you. Walter sighed. I closed my eyes when Doc leaned over Walter with the syringe.
Sleep well, friend, Doc murmured.
Walter's fingers relaxed, loosened. I held on to them. I was the one clinging now. The minutes passed, and all was quiet except my breathing. It was hitching and breaking, tending toward quiet sobs. Someone patted my shoulder.
He's gone, Wanda, Doc said, his voice thick. He's out of pain.
He pulled my hand free and rolled me carefully out of my awkward position into one that was less agonizing, but only slightly so. Now that I knew Walter wouldn't be disturbed, the sobs were not so quiet. I clutched at my side where it throbbed.
Oh, go ahead. You won't be happy otherwise, Jared muttered in a grudging tone.
I tried to open my eyes, but I couldn't do it. Something stung my arm. I didn't remember having hurt my arm. And in such a strange place, just inside my elbow.
Morphine,
Melanie whispered. We were already drifting now. I tried to be alarmed, but I couldn't be. I was too far gone.
No one said goodbye,
I thought dully. I couldn't expect Jared, but Jeb, Doc, Ian wasn't here.
No one's dying,
she promised me.
Just sleeping this time.
When I woke, the ceiling above me was dim, starlit. Nighttime. There were so many stars. I wondered where I was. There were no black obstructions, no pieces of ceiling in my view. Just stars and stars and stars. Wind fanned my face. It smelled like dust and something I couldn't put my finger on. An absence. The musty smell was gone. No sulfur, and it was so dry.
Wanda, someone whispered, touching my good cheek.
My eyes found Ian's face, white in the starlight, leaning over me. His hand on my skin was cooler than the breeze, but the air was so dry it wasn't uncomfortable. Where was I?
Wanda, are you awake?
They won't wait any longer. I whispered because he did.
What?
They're starting already. I knew you would want to be here.
She coming around?
Jeb's voice asked.
What's starting?
I asked.
Walter's funeral.
I tried to sit up, but my body was all rubbery. Ian's hand moved to my forehead, holding me down. I twisted my head under his hand, trying to see.
I was outside. Outside?
On my left, a rough, tumbled pile of boulders formed a miniature mountain, complete with scrubby brush. On my right, the desert plain stretched away from me, disappearing in the darkness. I looked down past my feet, and I could see the huddle of humans, ill at ease in the open air. I knew just how they felt. Exposed. I tried to get up again. I wanted to be closer, to see. Ian's hand restrained me.
Easy there, he said. Don't try to stand.
Help me,
I pleaded.
Wanda?
I heard Jamie's voice, and then I saw him, his hair bobbing as he ran to where I was lying. My fingertips traced the edges of the mat beneath me.
How did I get here, sleeping under the stars?
They didn't wait, Jamie said to Ian. It will be over soon.
Help me up, I said.
Jamie reached for my hand, but Ian shook his head.
I got her.
Ian slid his arms under me, very careful to avoid the worst of the sore spots. He pulled me up off the ground, and my head spun like a ship about to capsize. I groaned.
What did Doc do to me?
He gave you a little of the leftover morphine, so that he could check you out without hurting you. You needed sleep anyway.
I frowned, disapproving.
Won't someone else need the medicine more?
Shh, he said,
and I could hear a low voice in the distance. I turned my head. I could see the group of humans again. They stood at the mouth of a low, dark, open space carved out by the wind under the unstable-looking pile of boulders. They stood in a ragged line, facing the shadowed grotto. I recognized Trudy's voice.
Walter always saw the bright side of things. He could see the bright side of a black hole.
I'll miss that.
I saw a figure step forward, saw the gray and black braid swing as she moved, and watched Trudy toss a handful of something into the darkness. Sand scattered from her fingers, falling to the ground with a faint hiss. She went back to stand beside her husband. Jeffrey moved away from her, stepped forward toward the black space.
He'll find his Gladys now. He's happier where he is.
Jeffrey threw his handful of dirt. Ian carried me to the right side of the line of people, close enough to see into the murky grotto. There was a darker space on the ground in front of us, a big oblong around which the entire human population stood in a loose half-circle. Everyone was there. Everyone. Kyle stepped forward. I trembled, and Ian squeezed me gently. Kyle did not look in our direction. I saw his face in profile. His right eye was nearly swollen shut.
"Walter died human," Kyle said. "None of us can ask for more than that."
He threw a fistful of dirt into the dark shape on the ground. Kyle rejoined the group. Jared stood beside him. He took the short walk and stopped at the edge of Walter's grave.
"Walter was good through and through. Not one of us is his equal."
He threw his sand. Jamie walked forward, and Jared patted his shoulder once as they passed each other.
"Walter was brave," Jamie said. "He wasn't afraid to die. He wasn't afraid to live. And he wasn't afraid to believe. He made his own decisions, and he made good ones."
Jamie threw his handful. He turned and walked back, his eyes locked on mine the whole way. "Your turn," he whispered when he was at my side. Andy was already moving forward, a shovel in his hands.
"Wait," Jamie said in a low voice that carried in the silence. "Wanda and Ian haven't said anything." There was an unhappy mutter around me. My brain felt like it was pitching and heaving around inside my skull.
"Let's have some respect," Jeb said,
louder than Jamie. It felt too loud to me. My first instinct was to wave Andy ahead and make Ian carry me away. This was human mourning, not mine. But I did mourn, and I did have something to say. "Ian, help me get some sand."
Ian crouched down so I could scoop up a handful of the loose rocks at our feet.
He rested my weight on his knee to get his own share of dirt. Then he straightened and carried me to the edge of the grave. I couldn't see into the hole. It was dark under the overhang of rock, and the grave seemed to be very deep. Ian began speaking before I could.
"Walter was the best and brightest of what is human," he said,
and scattered his sand into the hole. It fell for a long time before I heard it hiss against the bottom. Ian looked down at me. It was absolutely silent in the starlit night. Even the wind was calm. I whispered, but I knew my voice carried to everyone. "There was no hatred in your heart," I whispered. "That you existed is proof that we were wrong. We had no right to take your world from you, Walter. I hope your fairy tales are true. I hope you find your Gladdy." I let the rocks trickle through my fingers and waited until I heard them fall with a soft patter onto Walter's body, obscured in the deep, dark grave. Andy started to work as soon as Ian took the first step back, shoveling from a mound of pale, dusty earth that was piled a few feet farther into the grotto. The shovel load hit with a thump rather than a whisper. The sound made me cringe. Aaron stepped past us with another shovel. Ian turned slowly and carried me away to make room for them. The heavy thuds of falling dirt echoed behind us. Low voices began to murmur. I heard footsteps as people milled and huddled to discuss the funeral. I really looked at Ian for the first time as he walked back to the dark mat where it lay on the open dirt, out of place, not belonging. Ian's face was streaked with pale dust, his expression weary. I'd seen his face like that before. I couldn't pinpoint the memory before Ian laid me on the mat again, and I was distracted. What was I supposed to do out here in the open? Sleep? Doc was right behind us. He and Ian both knelt down in the dust beside me.
"How are you feeling?" Doc asked, already prodding at my side.
I wanted to sit up, but Ian pressed my shoulder down when I tried. "I'm fine. I think maybe I could walk."
"No need to push it. Let's give that leg a few days, okay?"
Doc pulled my left eyelid up, absent-minded, and shone a tiny beam of light into it. My right eye saw the bright reflection that danced across his face. He squinted away from the light, recoiling a few inches. Ian's hand on my shoulder didn't flinch. That surprised me.
That doesn't help a diagnosis, does it? How does your head feel? Doc asked.
A little dizzy. I think it's the drugs you gave me, though, not the wound. I don't like them. I'd rather feel the pain, I think.
Doc grimaced.
So did Ian.
What? I demanded. I'm going to have to put you under again, Wanda. I'm sorry.
But why? I whispered. I'm really not that hurt. I don't want...
We have to take you back inside, Ian said, cutting me off, his voice low, as if he didn't want it to carry back to the others.
I could hear the voices behind us, echoing quietly off the rocks.
We promised that you wouldn't be conscious.
Blindfold me again.
Doc pulled the little syringe from his pocket. It was already depressed, only a quarter left.
I shied away from it, toward Ian. His hand on my shoulder became a restraint.
You know the caves too well, Doc murmured. They don't want you having the chance to guess.
But where would I go? I whispered, my voice frantic. If I knew the way out, why would I leave now?
If it eases their minds, Ian said.
Doc took my wrist and I didn't fight him. I looked away as the needle bit into my skin, looked at Ian. His eyes were midnight in the dark. They tightened at the look of betrayal in mine.
Sorry, he muttered.
It was the last thing I heard. Chapter 35 Tried. I groaned. My head felt all swirly and disconnected. My stomach rolled nauseatingly.
Finally, someone murmured in relief.
Ian, of course.
Hungry?
I thought about that and then made an involuntary gagging sound.
Oh, never mind. Sorry, again. We had to do it. People got all paranoid when we took you outside.
It's okay, I sighed.
Want some water?
No. I opened my eyes, trying to focus in the darkness. I could see two stars through the cracks overhead. Still night.
Or night again, who knew?
Where am I?
I asked.
The shapes of the cracks overhead were unfamiliar. I would swear I'd never stared at the ceiling before.
Your room, Ian said.
I searched for his face in the darkness, but could only make out the black shape that was his head. With my fingers, I examined the surface I lay on. It was a real mattress. There was a pillow under my head. My searching hand touched his, and he caught my fingers before I could withdraw them. Whose room is it, really?
Yours.
Ian?
It used to be ours. Kyle's and mine. Kyle's being held in the hospital wing until things can be decided. I can move in with Wes.
I'm not taking your room. And what do you mean, until things can be decided?
I told you there would be a tribunal.
When?
Why do you want to know?
Because if you're going through with that, then I have to be there. To explain.
To lie.
When?
I asked again. First light, I won't take you.
Then I'll take myself. I know I'll be able to walk as soon as my head stops spinning.
You would, wouldn't you?
Yes. It's not fair if you don't let me speak. Ian sighed. He dropped my hand and straightened slowly to his feet. I could hear his joints pop as he stood. How long had he been sitting in the dark, waiting for me to wake?
I'll be back soon. You might not be hungry, but I'm starving.
You had a long night.
Yes.
If it gets light, I won't sit here waiting for you.
He chuckled without humor. I'm sure that's true. So I'll be back before that, and I will help you get where you're going.
He leaned one of the doors away from the entrance to his cave, stepped around it, and then let it fall back into place. I frowned. That might be hard to do on one leg. I hoped Ian truly was coming back. While I waited for him, I stared up at the two stars I could see and let my head slowly become stationary. I really didn't like human drugs. Ugh, my body hurt, but the lurching in my head was worse. Time passed slowly, but I didn't fall asleep. I'd been sleeping most of the last 24 hours. I probably was hungry, too. I would have to wait for my stomach to calm before I was sure. Ian came back before the light, just as he'd promised.
"Feeling any better?" he asked as he stepped around the door.
"I think so. I haven't moved my head yet."
"Do you think it's you reacting to the morphine? Or Melanie's body?"
"It's Mel. She reacts badly to most painkillers. She found that out when she broke her wrist 10 years ago. He thought about that for a moment.
"It's odd, dealing with two people at once."
"Odd," I agreed.
"Are you hungry yet?"
I smiled. I thought I smelled bread. "Yes, I think my stomach is past the worst."
"I was hoping you'd say that."
His shadow sprawled out beside me. He felt for my hand, then pulled my fingers open and placed a familiar round shape in it. "Help me up?" I asked. He put his arm carefully around my shoulders and folded me up in one stiff piece, minimizing the ache in my side. I could feel something foreign on the skin there, tight and rigid.
"Thanks,"
I said, a little breathless. My head spun slowly. I touched my side with my free hand. Something adhered to my skin, under my shirt. "Are my ribs broken, then?"
"Doc's not sure. He's doing as much as he can."
"He tries so hard."
"He does."
"I feel bad that I used to not like him," I admitted. Ian laughed.
"Of course you didn't. I'm amazed you can like any of us."
"You've got that turned around," I mumbled, and dug my teeth into the hard roll. I chewed mechanically and then swallowed, setting the bread down as I waited to see how it hit my stomach.
"Not very appetizing, I know," Ian said.
I shrugged. "Just testing, to see if the nausea's really passed."
"Maybe something more appealing?"
I looked at him, curious, but I couldn't see his face. I listened to a sharp crackle and a ripping sound, and then I could smell, and I understood.
"Cheetos!" I cried. "Really? For me?"
Something touched my lip, and I crunched into the delicacy he offered.
"I've been dreaming about this," I sighed as I chewed.
That made him laugh. He put the bag in my hands. I downed the contents of the small bag quickly, and then finished my roll, seasoned by the cheese flavor still in my mouth. He handed me a bottle of water before I could ask.
"Thank you. For more than the Cheetos, you know. For so much."
"You're more than welcome, Wanda."
I stared into his dark blue eyes, trying to decipher everything he was saying with that sentence. There seemed to be something more than just courtesy in the words. And then I realized that I could see the color of Ian's eyes. I glanced quickly up at the cracks above. The stars were gone, and the sky was turning pale gray. Dawn was coming. First light.
"Are you sure you have to do this?" Ian asked, his hands already half extended as if to pick me up.
I nodded.
"You don't have to carry me. My leg feels better."
"We'll see."
He helped me to my feet, leaving his arm around my waist and pulling my arm around his neck.
"Careful now. How's that?"
I hobbled forward a step. It hurt, but I could do it.
"Great. Let's go."
"I think Ian likes you too much."
"Too much?"
I was surprised to hear from Melanie, and so distinctly. Lately, she only spoke up like this when Jared was around.
"I'm here, too.
Does he even care about that?"
"Of course he does. He believes us more than anyone besides Jamie and Jeb."
"I don't mean that."
"What do you mean?"
But she was gone. It took us a long time. I was surprised by how far we had to go. I'd been thinking we were going to the big plaza or the kitchen, the usual places for congregating. But we went through the eastern field and kept going until we finally reached the big, deep, black cave that Jeb had called the game room. I hadn't been here since my first tour. The biting scent of the sulfurous spring greeted me. Unlike most of the caverns here, the game room was much wider than it was tall. I could see that now because the dim blue lights hung from the ceiling rather than resting on the floor. The ceiling was only a few feet over my head, the height of a normal ceiling in a house. But I couldn't even see the walls. They were so distant from the lights. I couldn't see the smelly spring tucked away in some far corner, but I could hear it dribble and gush. Kyle sat in the brightest spot of light. He had his long arms wrapped around his legs. His face was set in a stiff mask. He didn't look up when Ian helped me limp in. On either side of him were Jared and Doc, on their feet, both with their arms hanging loose and ready at their sides, as though they were guards. Jeb stood beside Jared, his gun slung over one shoulder. He appeared relaxed, but I knew how quickly that could change. Jamie held his free hand. No. Jeb had his hand around Jamie's wrist, and Jamie didn't seem happy about it. When he saw me come in, though, he smiled and waved. He took a deep breath and looked pointedly at Jeb. Jeb dropped Jamie's wrist. Sharon stood beside Doc with Aunt Maggie at her other side. Ian pulled me toward the edge of the darkness surrounding the tableau. We weren't alone there. I could see the shapes of many others, but not their faces. It was strange. Through the caves, Ian had supported most of my weight with ease. Now, though, he seemed to have tired. His arm around my waist was slack. I lurched and hopped forward as best I could until he picked the spot he wanted. He settled me to the floor and then sat beside me. "Ouch," I heard someone whisper. I turned and could just make out Trudy. She scooted closer to us, Jeffrey and then Heath copying her. "You look rotten," she told me. "How bad are you hurt?" I shrugged. "I'm fine." I started to wonder if Ian had let me struggle just to make a show of my injuries, to make me testify against Kyle without words. I frowned at his innocent expression. Wes and Lily arrived then and came to sit with my little group of allies. Brant entered a few seconds later, and then Heidi, and then Andy and Paige. Aaron was last.
"That's everybody," he said. "Lucina's staying with her kids. She doesn't want them here. She said to go on without her."
Aaron sat beside Andy, and there was a short moment of silence.
"Okay, then," Jeb said in a loud voice meant to be heard by all. "Here's how it's gonna work. Straight-up majority vote. As usual, I'll make my own decision if I have a problem with the majority, 'cause this is my house," several voices interjected in chorus.
Someone chuckled but stopped quickly. This wasn't funny. A human was on trial for trying to kill an alien. This had to be a horrible day for all of them.
"Who's speaking against Kyle?" Jeb asked.
Ian started to stand beside me. "No," I whispered, tugging on his elbow. He shrugged me off and rose to his feet.
"This is simple enough," Ian said.
I wanted to jump up and clap my hand over his mouth, but I didn't think I could get to my feet without help.
"My brother was warned. He was not in any doubt about Jeb's ruling on this. Wanda is one of our community. The same rules and protections apply to her as to any of us. Jeb told Kyle point blank that if he couldn't live with her here, he should move on. Kyle decided to stay. He knew then and he knows now the penalty for murder in this place." "It's still alive," Kyle grunted. "Which is why I'm not asking for your death," Ian snapped back. "But you can't live here anymore. Not if you're a murderer at heart."
Ian stared at his brother for a moment, then sat on the ground beside me again.
"But he could get caught, and we'd have no idea," Brant protested, rising to his feet. "He'll lead them back here, and we'd have no warning."
There was a murmur through the room. Kyle glared at Brant.
"They'll never get me alive."
"Then it's a death sentence after all," someone muttered at the same time that Andy said, "You can't guarantee that."
"One at a time," Jeb warned.
"I've survived on the outside before,"
Kyle said angrily. Another voice came from the darkness.
"It's a risk."
I couldn't make out the owners of the voices. They were just hissing whispers. And another.
"What did Kyle do wrong? Nothing."
Jeb took a step toward the voice, glowering.
"My rules."
"She's not one of us,"
someone else protested. Ian started to rise again.
"Hey!"
Jared exploded. His voice was so loud that everyone jumped.
"Wanda's not on trial here. Does someone have a concrete complaint against her? Against Wanda herself? Then ask for another tribunal. But we all know she hasn't harmed anyone here. In fact, she saved his life."
He stabbed one finger toward Kyle's back. Kyle's shoulders hunched, like he'd felt the jab.
"Just seconds after he tried to throw her into the river, she risked her life to keep him from the same painful death. She had to know that if she let him fall, she would be safer here. She saved him anyway. Would any of you have done the same? Rescue your enemy? He tried to kill her, and yet will she even speak against him?"
I felt all the eyes in the dark room on my face as Jarrett now held his hand out, palm up, toward me.
"Will you speak against him, Wanda?"
I stared at him wide-eyed, stunned that he was speaking for me, that he was speaking to me, that he was using my name. Melanie was in shock, too, torn in half. She was overjoyed at the kindness in his face as he looked at us, the softness in his eyes that had been absent so long. But it was my name, he'd said. It was a few seconds before I could find my voice.
"This is all a misunderstanding," I whispered. "We both fell when the floor caved in. Nothing else happened."
I hoped the whisper would make it harder to hear the lie in my voice, but as soon as I was done, Ian chuckled. I nudged him with my elbow, but that didn't stop him. Jared actually smiled at me.
"You see? She even tries to lie in his defense."
"Tries being the operative word," Ian added.
"Who says it's lying? Who can prove that?"
Maggie asked harshly, stepping forward into the empty space beside Kyle.
"Who can prove that it's not the truth that sounds so false on its lips?"
"Mag,"
Jeb started.
"Shut up, Jebediah. I'm speaking. There is no reason for us to be here. No human was attacked. The insidious trespasser offers no complaint. This is a waste of all our time."
"I second that,"
Sharon added in a clear, loud voice. Doc shot her a pained look. Trudy jumped to her feet.
"We can't house a murderer and just wait around for him to be successful." "Murder is a subjective term," Maggie hissed. "I only consider it murder when something human is killed."
I felt Ian's arm wrap around my shoulder. I didn't realize that I was trembling until his motionless body was against mine.
"Human is a subjective term as well, Magnolia," Jared said, glowering at her. "I thought the definition embraced some compassion, some little bit of mercy."
"Let's vote," Sharon said before her mother could answer him. "Raise your hand if you think Kyle should be allowed to stay here, with no penalty for the misunderstanding." She shot a glance not at me, but at Ian beside me, when she used the word I'd used. Hands began to rise. I watched Jared's face as his features settled into a scowl. I struggled to raise my hand, but Ian tightened his hold around my arms and made an irritated noise through his nose. I held my palm as high as I could get it. In the end, though, my vote wasn't necessary. Jeb counted out loud.
10, 15, 20, 23. Okay. That's a clear majority.
I didn't look around to see who had voted how. It was enough that in my little corner all arms were crossed tightly over chests,
and all eyes stared at Jeb with expectant expressions. Jamie walked away from Jeb to come squeeze in between Trudy and me. He put his arm around me, under Ian's.
"Maybe your souls were right about us," he said, loud enough for most to hear his high, hard voice. "The majority are no better than..."
"Hush!" I hissed at him.
"Okay," Jeb said.
Everyone went silent. Jeb looked down at Kyle, then at me, and then at Jared.
"Okay, I'm inclined to go with the majority on this." "Jeb,"
Jared and Ian said simultaneously.
"My house, my rules," Jeb reminded them. "Never forget that. So you listen to me, Kyle. And you'd better listen too, I think, Magnolia. Anyone who tries to hurt Wanda again will not get a tribunal. They will get a burial."
He slapped the butt of his gun for emphasis. I flinched. Magnolia glared hatefully at her brother. Kyle nodded, as if accepting the terms. Jeb looked around the unevenly spaced audience, locking eyes with each member except the little group beside me.
"Tribunal's over," Jeb announced. "Who's up for a game?"
Chapter 36. Believed. The congregation relaxed, and a more enthusiastic murmur ran around the half circle. I looked at Jamie. He pursed his lips and shrugged.
"Jeb's just trying to get things back to normal. It's been a bad couple of days. Burying Walter..."
I winced. I saw that Jeb was grinning at Jared. After a moment of resistance, Jared sighed and rolled his eyes at the strange old man. He turned and strode quickly from the cave.
"Jared got a new ball?" someone asked.
"Cool,"
Wes said beside me.
"Playing games,"
Trudy muttered, and shook her head.
"If it eases the tension,"
Lily responded quietly, shrugging. Their voices were low, close beside me, but I could also hear other louder voices.
"Easy on the ball this time,"
Aaron said to Kyle. He stood over him, offering his hand. Kyle took the offered hand and got slowly to his feet. When he was standing, his head almost hit the hanging lanterns.
"The last ball was weak," Kyle said, grinning at the older man. "Structurally deficient."
"I nominate Andy for captain," someone shouted.
"I nominate Lily,"
Wes called out, getting to his feet and stretching.
"Andy and Lily."
"Yeah, Andy and Lily."
"I want Kyle,"
Andy said quickly. "Then I get Ian," Lily countered.
"Jared."
"Brent."
Jamie got to his feet and stood on his toes, trying to look tall.
"Paige."
"Heidi."
"Aaron."
"Wes."
The roll call continued. Jamie glowed when Lily chose him before half the adults were taken. Even Maggie and Jeb were picked for teams. The numbers were even until Lucina came back with Jared, her two small boys bouncing in excitement. Jared had a shiny new soccer ball in his hand. He held it out, and Isaiah, the older child, jumped up and down trying to knock it from his hand.
"Wanda?"
Lily asked. I shook my head and pointed to my leg.
"Right, sorry."
"I'm good at soccer,"
Mel grumbled.
"Well, I used to be."
"I can hardly walk,"
I reminded her.
"I think I'll sit this one out," Ian said.
"No,"
Wes complained.
"They've got Kyle and Jared. We're dead without you."
"Play," I told him. I'll keep score."
He looked at me, his lips pressed into a thin, rigid line. "I'm not really in the mood for playing a game."
"They need you,"
he snorted.
"Come on, Ian,"
Jamie urged.
"I want to watch," I said, "but it will be boring if one team has too much advantage."
"Wanda,"
Ian sighed.
"You really are the worst liar I've ever met."
But he got up and started stretching with Wes. Paige set up goalposts. Four lanterns. I tried to get to my feet. I was right in the middle of the field. Nobody noticed me in the dim light. All around, the atmosphere was upbeat now.
Charged with anticipation, Jeb had been right. This was something they needed, odd as it seemed to me. I was able to get onto all fours, and then I pulled my good leg forward so I was kneeling on the bad. It hurt. I tried to hop up onto my good leg from there. My balance was all off, thanks to the awkward weight of my sore leg. Strong hands caught me before I could fall on my face. I looked up a little rueful to thank Ian. The words caught in my throat when I saw that it was Jared whose arms held me up.
"You could have just asked for help," he said conversationally.
I cleared my throat. "I should have. I didn't want to..."
"Call attention to yourself?"
He said the words as if he were truly curious. There was no accusation in them. He helped me hobble toward the cave entrance. I shook my head once. I didn't want to make anyone do anything out of courtesy that they didn't want to do. That didn't explain it exactly right, but he seemed to understand my meaning.
"I don't think Jamie or Ian would begrudge you a helping hand."
I glanced back at them over my shoulder. In the low light, neither had noticed I was gone yet. They were bouncing the ball off their heads and laughing when Wes caught it in the face. "But they're having fun. I wouldn't want to interrupt that." Jared examined my face. I realized I was smiling in affection.
"You care about the kid quite a bit," he said.
"Yes," he nodded.
"And the man?"
Ian believes me. He watches over me. He can be so very kind for a human."
"Almost like a soul," I'd wanted to say, but that wouldn't have sounded like the compliment it was to this audience. Jared snorted. "For a human. A more important distinction than I'd realized."
He lowered me to the lip of the entrance. It made a shallow bench that was more comfortable than the flat floor. "Thank you," I told him. "Jeb did the right thing, you know."
"I don't agree with that."
Jared's tone was milder than his words. "Thank you also for before. You didn't have to defend me."
"Every word was the truth."
I looked at the floor. "It's true that I would never do anything to hurt anyone here. Not on purpose. I'm sorry that I hurt you when I came here. And Jamie. So sorry." He sat down right beside me, his face thoughtful.
"Honestly,"
he hesitated,
"the kid is better since you came. I'd sort of forgotten what his laugh sounded like."
We both listened to it now, echoing above the lower pitch of adult laughter. "Thank you for telling me that. It's been my biggest worry. I hoped I hadn't damaged anything permanently."
"Why?"
I looked up at him, confused.
"Why do you love him?" he asked,
his voice still curious but not intense. I bit my lip.
"You can tell me. He couldn't find the words to explain. "You can tell me," he repeated.
I looked at my shoes as I answered. "In part because Melanie does."
I didn't peek to see if the name made him flinch.
Remembering him the way she does, that's a powerful thing. And then when I met him in person,
I shrugged.
I can't not love him. It's part of the very makeup of these cells to love him. I hadn't realized before how much influence a host had on me. Maybe it's just human bodies. Maybe it's just Melanie.
She talks to you?
He kept his voice even, but I could hear the strain now. Yes.
How often?
When she wants to. When she's interested.
How about today?
Not much. She's kind of mad at me.
He barked out a surprised laugh. She's mad? Why?
Because of... Was there such a thing as double jeopardy here? Nothing. He heard the lie again and made the connection.
Oh, Kyle. She wanted him to fry.
He laughed again.
She would.
She can be violent,
I agreed. I smiled to soften the insult. It was no insult to him.
Really? How?
She wants me to fight back. But I can't do that. I'm not a fighter.
I can see that.
He touched my battered face with one fingertip.
Sorry.
No, anyone would do the same. I know what you must have felt.
You wouldn't.
If I were human, I would. Besides, I wasn't thinking of that. I was remembering the Seeker.
He stiffened.
I smiled again, and he relaxed a little. Mel wanted me to throttle her. She really hates that Seeker, and I can't find it in myself to blame her.
She's still searching for you. Looks like she had to return the helicopter, at least.
I closed my eyes, clenched my fists, and concentrated on breathing for several seconds. I didn't used to be afraid of her, I whispered. I don't know why she scares me so much now. Where is she?
Don't worry. She was just up and down the highway yesterday. She won't find you.
I nodded, willing myself to believe.
Can you hear Mal now?
He murmured. I kept my eyes closed.
I'm aware of her. She's listening very hard.
What's she thinking?
His voice was just a whisper.
Here's your chance,
I told her.
What do you want to tell him?
She was cautious for once. The invitation unsettled her.
Why? Why does he believe you now?
I opened my eyes and found him staring at my face, holding his breath.
She wants to know what happened to make you different now. Why do you believe us?
He thought for a moment.
An accumulation of things. You were so kind to Walter. I've never seen anyone but Doc be that compassionate. And you saved Kyle's life, where most of us would have let him fall just to protect ourselves, intended murder aside. And then you're such an appalling liar.
He laughed once.
I kept trying to see these things as evidence of some grand plot. Maybe I'll wake up tomorrow and feel that way again.
Mel and I flinched.
But when they started attacking you today, well, I snapped. I could see in them everything that shouldn't have been in me. I realized I already did believe, and that I was just being obstinate, cruel. I think I've believed since, well, a little bit since that first night when you put yourself in front of me to save me from Kyle.
He laughed as if he didn't think Kyle was dangerous.
But I'm better at lying than you are. I can even lie to myself.
She hopes you won't change your mind. She's afraid you will.
He closed his eyes.
Mel.
My heart thudded faster in my chest. It was her joy that sped it, not mine. He must have guessed how I loved him. After his questions about Jamie, he must have seen that.
Tell her that won't happen.
She hears you.
How straightforward is the connection?
She hears what I hear, sees what I see.
Feels what you feel?
Yes.
His nose wrinkled. He touched my face again, softly, a caress.
You don't know how sorry I am.
My skin felt hotter where he had touched it. It was a good heat, but his words burned hotter than his touch. Of course he was sorrier for hurting her, of course. It shouldn't bother me.
Come on, Jared. Let's go.
We looked up. Kyle was calling to Jared. He seemed utterly at ease, as if he had not been on trial for his life today. Maybe he'd known it would go his way. Maybe he was quick to get over anything. He didn't seem to notice me there beside Jared. I realized for the first time that others had. Jamie was watching us with a satisfied smile. This probably looked like a good thing to him. Was it?
What do you mean? What does he see when he looks at us? His family put back together?
Isn't it? Sort of.
With the one unwelcome addition.
But better than it was yesterday.
I guess.
I know, she admitted. I'm glad Jared knows I'm here. But I still don't like him touching you.
and I like it too much.
My face tingled where Jared's fingers had brushed it.
Sorry about that.
I don't blame you. Or at least I know I shouldn't.
Thanks.
Jamie wasn't the only one watching. Jeb was curious, that little smile gathering up the corners of his beard. Sharon and Maggie watched with fire in their eyes. Their expressions were so much the same that the youthful skin and bright hair did nothing to make Sharon look younger than her grizzled mother. Ian was worried. His eyes were tight, and he seemed on the verge of coming to protect me again, to make sure Jared wasn't upsetting me. I smiled to reassure him. He didn't smile back, but he took a deep breath.
I don't think that's why he's worried, Mel said.
Are you listening to her now?
Jared was on his feet, but still watching my face. His question distracted me before I could ask her what she meant.
Yes.
What's she saying?
We're noticing what the others think of your change of heart.
I nodded toward Melanie's aunt and cousin. They turned their backs on me in synchronization.
Tough nuts, he acknowledged. Fine, then, Kyle boomed, turning his body toward the ball that sat under the brightest spot of light. We'll win it without you. I'm coming.
Jared threw one wistful glance at me, at us, and ran to get in on the game. I wasn't the best scorekeeper. It was too dark to see the ball from where I sat. It was too dark even to see the players well when they weren't right under the lights. I began counting from Jamie's reactions, his shout of victory when his team scored, his groan when the other team did. The groans outnumbered the shouts. Everyone played. Maggie was the goalie for Andy's team, and Jeb was the goalie for Lily's. They were both surprisingly good. I could see their silhouettes in the light from the goalpost lamps, moving as lithely as if they were decades younger. Jeb was not afraid to hit the floor to stop a goal, but Maggie was more effective without resorting to such extremes. She was like a magnet for the invisible ball. Every time Ian or Wes got off a shot, thunk, it landed in her hands. Trudy and Paige quit after a half hour or so and passed me on their way out, chattering with excitement. It seemed impossible that we'd started the morning with a trial, but I was relieved that things had changed so drastically. The women weren't gone long. They came back with arms full of boxes. Granola bars, the kind with fruit filling. The game came to a halt. Jeb called halftime, and everyone hurried over to eat breakfast. The goods were divvied up at the center line. It was a mob scene at first. Here you go, Wanda, Jamie said, ducking out of the group. He had his hands full of the bars and water bottles tucked under his arms.
Thanks. Having fun?
Yeah. Wish you could play.
Next time, I said.
Here you go.
Ian was there, his hands full of granola bars.
Beat ya,
Jamie told him.
Oh,
Jared said, appearing on Jamie's other side. He also had too many bars for one. Ian and Jared exchanged a long glance.
Where's all the food? Kyle demanded.
He stood over an empty box, his head swiveling around the room looking for the culprit.
Catch,
Jared said, tossing granola bars one by one, hard, like knives. Kyle plucked them out of the air with ease, then jogged over to see if Jared was holding out on him.
Here, Ian said, shoving half of his haul toward his brother without looking at him. Now go!
Kyle ignored him. For the first time today he looked at me, staring down at me where I sat. His irises were black with the light behind him. I couldn't read his expression. I recoiled and caught my breath when my ribs protested. Jared and Ian closed ranks in front of me like stage curtains.
You heard him, Jared said. Can I say something first? Kyle asked.
He peered down through the space between them. They didn't respond.
I'm not sorry, Kyle told me. I still think it was the right thing to do.
Ian shoved his brother. Kyle reeled back but then stepped forward again.
Hold on, I'm not done. Yeah, you are. Jared said.
His hands were clenched, the skin over his knuckles white. Everyone had noticed now. The room was hushed, all the fun of the game lost.
No, I'm not.
Kyle held his hands up, a gesture of surrender, and spoke to me again.
I don't think I was wrong, but you did save my life. I don't know why, but you did. So, I figure, a life for a life. I won't kill you. I'll pay the debt that way.
You stupid jackass, Ian said.
Who's got the crush on a worm, bro? You gonna call me stupid?
Ian lifted his fists, leaning forward.
I'll tell you why, I said, making my voice louder than I wanted to, but it had the effect I was after. Ian and Jared and Kyle turned to stare at me, fight forgotten for the moment. It made me